Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome Eric Starks to the podcast. Eric serves as Chairman and CEO of FTR Transportation Intelligence, the industry leader in freight transportation forecasting. Having spent his entire career in the freight transportation sector, Eric is a leading researcher in freight modal share analysis and forecasting. His background includes research in both rail and truck freight movements and asset equipment purchases. Eric is one of the premier industry forecasters on transportation equipment demand for rail cars, commercial trucks, and trailers. Eric is also frequently called on to speak at Wall Street analyst meetings, association events, and private meetings for his unique ability to communicate to his audiences. His ability to easily convey how the macroeconomy, logistics, freight, and equipment demand impacts their respective businesses makes him relatable and also entertaining. Eric resides in Bloomington, Indiana, and he is an active member of the transportation community, as well as a former board member for the National Industrial Transportation League, more commonly known as the NIT League. And he was also instrumental in the creation of the Indiana University Transportation Board. Hey, Eric, welcome to our podcast.
It is a delight to be here, man. You make me sound good, so I really appreciate that.
Hey, whatever it takes. No, and it's really great to have you, Eric. We've had a great relationship over the years, and I know we've had a few other FTR of your FTR colleagues on board for this podcast, so it's great to have you join the party.
Thanks for the invite. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we sort of jump into the nitty gritty, Eric, why don't you, for our listeners that may not be familiar with FTR, why don't you give us sort of a brief overview of you guys, what it is that you guys do, the type of clients you have, et cetera, kind of like the elevator pitch of FTR, I guess.
Yeah, no, thanks for that opportunity. So our job is to really look at the transportation market from a 30,000 foot view, first and foremost.
Right.
And to do that, we need to look at what the economy is doing. How does that impact the freight market? Then what does that mean for the carriers, the shippers? What does that look like for things like capacity, rates? And then ultimately, what does that mean for the equipment market? How does that impact the demand for trucks, the demand for rail cars, trailers? And so we kind of see that whole beginning to end. And so it's nice to be able to be able to see that. So our customers are all over the board, from the carriers, from rail to truck, the shipping community, Wall Street, all of the truck and trailer manufacturers and OEs. So it's a very diverse group. And honestly, everybody's trying to figure out where are things going? What does the market look like in the future? And that's what we really are trying to do for you guys.
Okay, terrific. That's a great overview. So why don't we just sort of jump in on a broad level? You know, there's so many moving parts of the freight economy these days as it relates to capacity, consumer demand, which we see reflected in retail sales that came out for the month of January this week that were actually pretty solid amid the Omicron wave, you know, rates, sourcing, et cetera. How do you view sort of what's happening right now? And this could be on a right now basis as well as a looking back or looking ahead basis too.
Sure. No, that's a wonderful question. So there's several things that are happening, and we almost have to look at these by mode just a tad bit. So if we look at the broader transportation market and demand for goods, and you brought up the retail sales numbers, which have been very, very good.
Right.
We have seen a shift towards the consumer market that we really haven't seen, at least that I ever recall in my 26 years of doing this. And so the pandemic really changed that dynamic. And so it has created an environment where truck capacity remains extremely tight. We're at or near 100% utilization. If you can find a driver, put them in a truck, they're going to be driving.
Sure.
The spot market continues to be hot in that respect. Obviously, intermodal is a big deal of trying to understand how do we move freight from the ports and bring those inland. But we haven't seen the type of growth that we would typically expect within there. And that's one of the things that's driving truck demand so to be so strong too, is we're seeing that those forces kind of hitting each other. Mm-hmm. And it's just this dynamic is really interesting because it's not even all the way across the board. For example, there's still a significant amount of equipment capacity available for the railroads. But you're running into things like labor, you're running into resource allocation throughout the full supply chain. So the big overarching theme right now is that the market continues to be tight, and that we should expect that rates are going to remain at elevated levels, at least for the foreseeable future, until we start seeing the supply chains come back into line. And I know you guys have talked about supply chains, and I think everybody is kind of sick of talking about supply chains. But it really is a big issue when we talk about the U.S. and North America. It's a global market, that period. And I think sometimes we forget about that. And so we need to understand what's happening. Everybody on the globe is dealing with the same exact things that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, isn't it fair to say truly is and has been for a while now a real carrier's market?
Oh my gosh, yeah. If you have equipment, you can make a lot of money. Even if you don't have equipment, you can still make a lot of money, right? You can,
yeah.
You've got the brokers, you've got everybody involved, and everybody's trying to find capacity. Yes, it is totally a carrier's market right now. Okay. And I guarantee you, shippers are going to remember that.
We always see those pendulums as the shifts in the cycle, and I'm sure it's coming. Speaking of money and rates, we'd be remiss if we weren't to talk about inflation. Obviously, you look at these numbers, especially in the last 2-3 months, even going back, we have more than that, even going back to say last July, August. And the inflationary impact on freight, supply chain, logistics operations is really been quite significant, obviously, as well as on us consumers too. Why don't you offer up your take on sort of how you see what's happening on as it relates to the intersection of inflation in logistics and the supply chain?
Yeah, it's interesting because transportation saw inflation before anybody else. And it's hard to talk about inflation from a transportation perspective because you have so many cycles. You've got the ups and downs that are constantly occurring. So having said that, early on, as the pandemic started to unfold, we really started seeing prices started to go up.
Yeah.
And then 6 to 9 months later, we really started seeing then prices for underlying commodities going up. So not only was it just the transportation component going up, but then the underlying commodity that was getting hauled started to go up. And it was heavily within the raw commodity market. You know, things like when you start looking at steel, lumber, any of those things that are going into manufacturing, those were going up. So those actually were happening much earlier than what everybody's talking about right now. That has finally filtered its way through into the retail market. The global market is driving part of this. The supply chain issues that we're talking about is driving part of this. But it's just the underlying demand. It's the basic supply and demand. Demand is high. Supply is, in some cases, relatively robust, but it's just not to the level of where the demand is. And that's creating price increases. And if you look at the retail numbers that just came out, we look at them in two different ways. And one is nominal. So it's basically, what are you actually paying for it right now? And then the other is real rates. And so that takes into account inflationary pressure. It already takes that portion off. And we're seeing the divergence there. We're seeing where the nominal rates are slowly moving higher, but the real rates are coming down. That then really just tells us that inflation is becoming a bigger problem.
Yeah.
And the other part of this too, Jeff, is that everybody keeps wondering, well, gosh, the Fed's going to have to move. They're going to have to raise interest rates to slow the economy down. They will try to do that. Will they be successful? It's going to be very hard to tell because this is completely an unknown environment right now. And because this is such a global issue, if you see the U.S. markets doing something, will it ripple effect to the global market? And I, right now, I don't see how that happens. I think that this is going to have to come under control just by us coming out of the pandemic and starting to normalize things.
Okay. And separate but related, we're seeing some real rising in gas prices. And just a fresh example would be how the Department of Energy's Energy Information Administration reported earlier this week that for its most recently recorded week, I think it was the week ending February 8th. I can't recall. I don't have my calendar from me, but the gas price is the average price per gallon of diesel gasoline topped the $4 per gallon mark for the first time, Eric, since March 2014. So nearly 8 years, pretty significant in itself and not entirely unexpected, I don't think, given the steady drumbeat of increases that we've been seeing in recent weeks. Obviously, that's another obstacle for shippers, with carriers having a more of a pass-through vibe to it. How do you sort of view what's going on with these elevated diesel prices, for example?
Yeah, it's a big number. I mean, there's nothing to sugarcoat that one. The carriers, by and large, really don't care. They're like, okay, I've got freight to move, and I'm going to do this. It's the shipper that's getting hurt because it's exactly what you said. It's a pass through cost, so it has a limited impact. And where it becomes more problematic is when freight starts to ease up. Then it becomes a cash flow issue. Right now, that's really not the case in how the transactions are working. Plus, when you see the digitization of load matching and freight and stuff, the cash flow stuff is less of an issue because of how that money flows. And I think that that's going to that will help some of the smaller carriers as we go forward. But it also creates more transparency within the full environment. But one of the things that's really interesting here is that the underlying demand hasn't gone up dramatically. It's
sure.
The pricing has gone up because if you look at how much fuel we're using within the U.S. market, that's not what's driving it. The other thing too is typically if the supply is relatively tight and demand is strong, then you start seeing more oil field activity. And that really hasn't been happening, at least to a level that we would have expected at this type of price point. And that is one of the areas that if that happens, that actually could, it's this good news, bad news scenario, right? You potentially start bringing down fuel prices, but you then start taking out transportation resources and allocating them to the oil fields. That has a big impact on flatbeds. It has an impact on power units. Because of the type of stuff they're moving. They're moving pipe, they're moving sand in the sandboxes that get put onto to the flatbeds. So it in one way, it could help, and in another way, it could create additional issues, specifically in different regions.
Okay, got it. Great summary. So kind of a two-part question here. Why don't we start first with just a driver shortage? You know, the ATA, American Trucking Associations, not all that long ago said that we're currently dealing with about an 80,000 driver shortfall, significant number to be sure. We're seeing more people do career changes. You know, we've seen this narrative of the great resignation. People want to be closer to home. It's creating a lot of it, plus the aging out of the workforce. I mean, these are all topics we've all seen and heard and discussed a myriad of times in the past, but that doesn't mean they have gone away or don't remain problematic. How would you sort of assess what's going on as it relates to our industry's driver shortage?
Yeah, it's fascinating. We've done a lot of work on this. Actually, Avery Weiss, who you've had on this program before,
yeah,
has done some fantastic work on this. And what's really interesting is that we're seeing a disconnect in the type of drivers that are coming into the industry. And
okay.
What I mean is that you are seeing that a traditional firm that would be just a traditional payroll firm carrier is not really seeing that growth. It's seen very limited growth. Where all the growth is happening is in owner operators and small companies. We're seeing a huge number of applications for becoming a company and then working their way through. But it's really one and two truck operations. But it's been a huge jump over the last year and a half. So that driver shortage issue continues to be a problem, but it is more acute within the large carriers. So it means that shippers have to be more nimble about going out and acquiring freight transportation in different avenues.
Okay.
And that creates a lot more complexity. But in general, though, I would say the driver situation, as we start looking out longer term, is going to be still problematic, but it is always going to ebb and flow with the economy and the freight market.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And just also driver related, we've obviously all seen the headline news about what's been going on in Canada and the Ambassador Bridge connecting the United States and Canada over by Windsor, Ontario in Detroit. You know, the blockade came to sort of an end last Sunday. Now there's word that the caravan of truckers, I mean, obviously this, as we all know, this goes back to vaccine mandates and, you know, we're not going to jump into that, that part, but you know, the impact of this, of it on the supply chain, should it come into the U.S., could be quite an issue. And we saw there's been a lot of, numbers about what it did, what the blockade did to the automotive industry, for example, and it resulted in a real major problems in terms of labor availability, parts, supplies, etc. So should this move on into the U.S.? What does that mean? I mean, what does that mean for shippers? What does that mean for supply chain stakeholders? What are the things they should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah. So I think it means short term headaches for different shippers. But what's interesting is you are absolutely right, where it was heavily automotive that got hit on this particular crossing caravan blockade. The thing about that, though, is this is just a gut feeling of how I personally see the situation, is that this was probably a good thing for automotive in the sense that they were continuing to have supply chain problems, specifically as it relates to chips. So in essence, having a couple days down here and there is not going to hurt them because they're not running at full capacity.
Right.
So taking a couple days here and there, if it's longer term structurally remains, then that creates some issues. But from everything that we have seen, is it has not hurt overall production levels, at least as what we expect them to be between now and the middle of the summer. The constraint is still going to continue to be the chips.
Yeah.
Having said that, I mean, this is one of the things that you're right. It's such a political quagmire of what's happening within this environment. It's you're always stepping into an area that you want to tiptoe. But I mean, it's right now we're not seeing any potential issues with caravans, for example, coming to the U.S. to be overly problematic, more than just some nuisances and headaches for various areas, but nothing long term structurally.
Right. Okay. Good. That's good to hear. And sort of just staying on the political slant for a minute. Not that long ago, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act got signed into law. Encouraging, considering it's been sort of this quest for a new long term infrastructure bill.
Right.
You know, the American Society of Civil Engineers routinely is giving the United States pretty bad grades when it comes to the state of our infrastructure, ranging, you know, C-, D+. You know, and you compare that to other countries, and it's really not looking good. So this comes at an important and needed time. A lot of these projects within the legislation obviously won't have any type of short-term impact. You know, they have to go through a lot of different permitting processes and things like that. Right. But in time, right, they stand to help augment freight flows, supply chains, et cetera. So what's your sort of take on the bill? We don't have to obviously peel the onion too deep. It's like 1,000 pages plus, or if not many more. But what do you think about the supply chain takeaways as it relates to the that legislation?
Yeah, it's really interesting because it was a pretty much bipartisan bill. But for political reasons of, you know, when people voted for it, it was just really interesting how that turned out. But everybody now that it's there, everybody's like, great, send me money, you know? So, and so in general, I think it has some good stuff in there. It will help, in some ways. For example, you've got the ability to go out and start hiring, and training some of the younger drivers. That won't solve the problem for the driver shortage, for example, but it has the ability to start doing some training and getting people up to speed. But in general, I mean, you're right. We are so far behind on some of the infrastructure. One of the concerns that was always there is if the things started to happen too soon with regards to getting this stuff off the ground and moving, you know, if you're in a transportation supply chain crisis, and then you now need to move additional stuff. And it's different, right? You're talking about a lot of crushed stone. You're talking cement. You're talking, you know, all of these things to build roads and bridges. Then you then exacerbate a problem that's already there. But the reality is it's really not until at least the end of this year, moving into next year, before we really see any potential impact. To your point, it's just a slow process to move this thing through. So by and large, I see this as a good thing. And I, you know, ultimately, will we get our, for example, roads and bridges back to where we need them to be? No. Will it help? I think it'll help. But the big issue, though, is about how do you pay for it longer term? And that one's always fascinating to have that conversation. Yeah. I'm a huge proponent of just the gas tax, right? The fuel tax.
Yeah.
It's so easy. And the truckers eat a lot of that cost, and they're more than happy to pay it. So we've had those discussions a lot, because I'm like, it's not about fairness. It's about sometimes what can actually truly be done. And that's an easy way to do it. So,
yeah, it really continually, the prospect of raising the federal gas tax seems to continually fall on deaf ears in Washington, unfortunately.
But it's so interesting because, there's little political downside to it, to be honest. So, you know, I don't play within that particular arena, but it's just fascinating to see how that, if anybody sees it. I mean, heck, they continue to call it a user fee and on everything, and you know, that's how you can get away with raising taxes on stuff. So, you know, it's really fascinating.
No, absolutely. All right, Eric, just a few more quick ones. And this is something that you and I actually spoke about a week or two ago. Given the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on supply chains, there's been a lot of renewed talk about perhaps having more of a serious conversation or focus on the domestic supply chain,
right?
You know, in the form of nearshoring, reshoring, whatever you want to call it. But that comes as sort of the expense of, or contrasting with, supply chain resilience. You know, there's a need to control costs. Obviously, there's a huge labor cost advantage working with sourcing and manufacturing out of Asia. But then perhaps if we were more focused on the domestic angle or reshoring, we wouldn't have all this port congestion. You know, this is a conversation that can go on for days, and surely gets a lot of attention, especially at industry events and whatnot. But, you know, without getting too deep here, you know, making the case for or against sort of the regionalization of supply chains is an interesting topic. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about it.
Yeah, and I can honestly say I don't have an opinion one way or the other. Should we be nearshoring or shouldn't we?
Right.
But when we look at the numbers, we look at the data, it is going to be hard to nearshore items. We're already seeing a labor shortage out there. So when you start seeing a labor shortage, one, you can't fill all the positions that you're already looking for now, and then two, you start seeing rising prices. So
yeah.
To do that, the reason why we're already doing stuff and importing them is because you can find it cheaper elsewhere. And it can be done in a different way. So that cost advantage is typically already there. So bringing it back into the U.S. is really difficult to see. The only thing that I really see has some potential legs is when you start looking at it from a national security standpoint.
Yes.
One of the areas specifically on that is chips, semiconductors. You know, we've already seen that there's been some talk of investment there. I fully expect that there will be some government support to do that because of the security risks of having that all outsourced. I mean, you're talking everything from electronics all the way up to automobiles that it has an impact on. But right now, I just have a really hard time seeing how we do any nearshoring. And if they did try to do nearshoring again, further along, it would be into Mexico. And they've already done most of that. So by the time you switch it, you know, we've already corrected a lot of the issues that we've been trying to deal with over this last 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. No, great point. And just to wrap up, there's just been a lot of talk about how 2022 is sort of viewed as the year of the search for capacity, just shifting back to the over-the-road segment for a minute. And the reason I brought that up, Eric, is because you can't help but notice the ongoing ascendance, if you will, of freight brokerages. They're just everywhere. Carriers have established their own brokerage operations. The established brokers, and thinking more like C.H. Robinson, Echo, XPO, etc., they've all beefed up operations, especially on the IT side. You know, while there is a finite amount of capacity, and you see it within the carrier bases, that doesn't necessarily alleviate all the problems, because at the end of the day, getting a truck is still quite a difficult exercise for shippers. So, you know, there's a lot to chew on when it comes to sort of the impact of brokerages on all this. And I'd just be curious to see how you guys at FTR see that situation.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason why you have brokerages is, in essence, the shipper needs help, right? Either the carrier is trying to get you to help them find a place to put their capacity, or the shipper is saying, I need capacity. And right now it's the shipper saying, I need capacity. And going back to the thing that I mentioned earlier is that when you looked at the large established carriers, they're not adding a huge amount of capacity. They're not adding a lot of drivers. So as your market goes up, if you're a shipper and demand continues to be strong, your core carriers can't haul all the freight that you want them to. And that means that you have to go look at other alternatives.
Yeah.
A broker is a fantastic way to be able to do that. You just don't have the time to do that. But this also has then brought up the point of, should shippers be having their own equipment? You know, do they need their own fleet?
Right.
That has other headaches. And, you know, I have usually said, if that's not part of your strategic plan long term, man, don't be looking at that right now, because it's a whole different beast. But if it's strategically in your plan, then great. Then have those discussions, but don't make a knee-jerk reaction to do that. And in without that, you know, the broker has a big part to play on this. But it's going to ebb and flow. You know, we're going to get to the point where things start to ease back up. They don't need the broker so much when things start to settle down. But, you know, brokers always are going to have a place in there.
Yeah, I mean, is it fair to say that that brokerages are in many cases thriving right now? Just when you see the dry van spot rates per mile, you know, you look at Truck Stop, you look at DAT data. You know, they're almost cracking records on a monthly basis.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the broker's doing very well right now. If you can't make money being a broker right now, then you might as well just hang it up for the moment. So,
right.
It's definitely, I mean, everybody dealing with transportation, if you're on the asset side, the brokerage side, any of that, you're making money. I mean, it's just the demand is there.
Yeah. And I always like to look at the load to truck ratio to see, I think that really puts it in perspective. In many cases, you'll see something like 14 loads to one truck, whether it's, you know, dry van, reefer, whatever we're talking about. Always interesting. But Eric, we're at the end of our allotted time for today's podcast. And on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. I really enjoy this. Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. And for our audience, for those of you that are on Twitter, please feel free to go ahead and give FTR a follow simply at FTR Intel. And also, please go ahead and give us at Logistics Management a follow. That's simply at Logistics MGMT. And also, please go ahead and sign up for our podcast. It's entitled Supply Chain 24/7, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day. We'll see you next time.